Well, this is Mike's Party, a roundtable discussion, and it is February. February 6th?
February 6th.
And here's Rachel.
Oh, no, 6th is the 7th.
7th.
Yeah, 7th. Okay. February 7th.
And this is Thomas Robb.
Jason Robb.
And Rachel just got here.
Yep.
Say hi, Rachel.
Hello, everyone.
Good.
So anyway, it's a nice sunny day. And
it is nice. It is sunny.
And we're, the law of activity is going here on the, at headquarters here. And we got a lot of great things. We got the Faith and Freedom Conference coming up. Literally just a couple months down the road, April 29th, 30th, and May 1st. And a lot of great speakers going to be here. We have, I think it's just probably one of our best conferences ever because we're going to have a lot of speakers here, as well as a lot of activities for the family and then nature hikes for the children and youth activities.
We got registrations coming
in. Registrations, and we got our, also it's the 50th anniversary of course, Dad, you and Mom, and 50 years that you guys have been having your ministry. And so that's a major milestone, not only being married 50 years, but really 50 years being involved in the ministry, really spreading this message of White Christian Revival. A lot of people, you know, they brag about, oh, we've been involved 10, 15, 20, even 25 years, which is great. You know, that's something to be complimented for. But 50 years, that's a long time. I mean, since the mid 60s. And so that's.
So what was the actual year of your ordination then? Like
May 20, 1966.
Yeah.
May 20.
So that is
May 20 is my ordination, and May 25 is when I got married.
Right. So anyway, that's a great thing. We have a special plan, dinner and all that for the attendees at the
Faith. We have fried chicken watermelon?
No fried chicken watermelon. So, but it's going to be a great time, and so we have that activity going on.
I like fried chicken.
You like fried chicken. Hey, I'm the first one I like fried chicken and some watermelon. But anyway, we got that going on, and then we also have the project still of the Christian Revival Research and Development Center that, again, we are encouraging people when they get their state and federal tax refund checks, give a percentage of that to this project. This is a major project that we are undertaking, and it's a project that really is going to be a focal point for the white resistance in the future, because this is where a place where teenagers will be able to come, be trained in politics, be trained in the history of this resistance. We will have classrooms there. We're going to have a library. We're going to have just all different types of office space there related to the research and development. We're going to have a museum there. So this is a major undertaking that we are taking, and there's no other organization out there that's doing that.
Well, Jason, I think a lot of people are very cynical. They think that, I was talking to someone the other day, and they're like, "No, I really don't see what the point is. We can talk about stuff and share news and opinions and stuff, but young people are today, they're just too cynical. They have no idea what America was like a few, generations ago, and they don't really care, and they're just cynical and so forth, and so, what's the point?" And they had a few.
Well, that makes the point all the more important.
Odd techniques is how to reach young people. But anyway, with you directing the youth corps, Jason, we see, there's a lot of cynicism out there, but we see the exact opposite. We see, and maybe that's because like attracts like. We're very positive, and we know that we're going to win. And so young people who are idealistic, they like that. And so they're attracted to this organization. They want to get involved. They want to receive training. They want to be educated and so forth. They don't want to just,
Well, they basically won't be missionaries. I mean, right. And that's what part of the program is. They won't be missionaries in their own communities helping spread this message of White Christian Revival. And so, like you said, Rachel, they're very idealistic, and they want to do something, And this research center is going to give the bread and butter for them to get on the right path.
Right.
Yeah, but this person, cynical, you have to kind of understand you know, have to kind of understand why they're that way. Because when you look across the landscape of this nation and the political landscape, and you look across what's going on in our schools and our social endeavors and so forth, it does look bleak. It does look like it's all wrapped up and over with and done for. And
so just enjoy the ride going down.
But you know, but I can see some people who look at that and they have lost hope, and that's why, you know, our message is so important. It's kind of like, I don't know if you got the email I sent you last night or not about the theme I chose for the Faith and Freedom Conference, and I chose the theme "Be a Lighthouse," and based upon that song, "The Lighthouse," you know, that people can go on the internet and listen to it, and then also based upon Matthew 5:14, where it talks about being a light, and you know, a light in the midst of the darkness does give hope to people. You know, whether you're a weary traveler, perhaps, I know, not even being a weary traveler, I know. Driving, I think particularly when we're going to visit my mom and dad out in Arizona, and you come across Highway 10 and Interstate 10, and you crest the hillside, the raised elevation, a little east of Tucson, and you see the lights of the city in the distance. And you think, you know, it'd be 25, 30, 40 miles away, and you see the lights in the city. And so, all right, we're almost there. And I can see a weary traveler in the old days, you know, come in and see the light on in a cabin or in his home, and, you know, and seeing that hope that he's reached his destination. And then, of course, the concept of the lighthouse. The lighthouse on a rocky coastline, warning ships and guiding them. And so a lighthouse, the light always shines brightest in the darkness. And so I can see people who perhaps are weary and feel hopeless and feel that all is lost. And yet, at some point, you know, we have to have the responsibility that we can be a light to them. We can be a light to our nation, to those young people that he has given up on, and to people that are weary, people are looking for hope. You know, the light in the darkness is so critical. And that's what we have to be. We have to constantly be that light so people can see the pathway of deliverance. And so I can understand this person that you made reference to feeling that way. And because a lot of people feel that way. A lot of people who are not as such in the movement, who feels what to use, to many people within the movement, you know, use that in a very wide sense, who feel that it's all worthless, of no hope. And yet, if we don't do something, if we don't try, we're no better than the politicians who betrayed us. Because that's exactly what a person's doing. If they're saying, well, what's the point? They're saying, I'm gonna betray my people because everybody else is.
Right, and the thing is, excuse me, and the thing is, that, you know, you have like this person that was very cynical about doing anything at all, and of course he has lost hope, and that is, and just two comments, right or wrong, two comments on that. One is, when you have a person who basically is cynical, they really have, and psychologically they have accepted defeat. They have accepted that, okay, we have lost, there's nothing we can do about it. Like Rachel said, just enjoy the ride as we sink, you know. Hell with our children. It doesn't really matter anymore because all is lost. And so that's one bad thing. The second thing is, when you're negative and cynical about that, that spreads to other people.
Right.
And then they get negative and cynical and just like all hope is lost. And that's why I think, you know, that, again, just making a comment, that's why I think what really makes the Knights unique in white resistance. Because literally, you can go to any organization or any so-called nationalist website, and everything is doom and gloom. Everything is negative. It's, you know, look at what's happening out there, all the atrocity against white people, which all of that is true. And no one's saying, oh, that's not happening. Absolutely, all that's happening is true. But at the same time, they don't even consider, okay, well, that is true. There is bad things happening against us. But what can we do to turn that around? What can we use to change our people's minds and beliefs and being positive? What perception can we portray out there to make realize white people out there that they can still have victory? They still can reach their future generation. And to me, I guess I don't understand the concept. And maybe because we've been raised in it, our family have been raised with this idea, that I just don't understand the idea of, well, basically all hope is lost, you know? Because we understand that we are the same people in the Bible. We are the covenant people. God has always delivered his people. God has always used the enemy to bring judgment in the land to force his people to wake up. You look in the Bible, he did that with, you know, Syria back then, all the enemies in the Bible were used to basically bring judgment to his people, for the people to basically say, we need to rely on God, we need to love God, and we need to love our people. And that's basically what's happening now. We have, you know, basically we're under judgment. God is forcing us to basically think race, think you have to love your people and love your God. And from that standpoint, that's what's positive about it, because we know God is not going to turn against his people. We know God is not going to say, well, all hope is lost. We know God is not sitting up in heaven saying, oh my gosh, I didn't think this was going to happen. All of this is playing out. God knows what's happening tomorrow. He knows what's happening 5 years from now, 10 years from now. And we have to sometimes stop and think that, yes, it is very dark and bleak out there. But same token, God has a plan for his people. And when we realize that, that to me gives me so much hope. Realize we are going to win. We are seeing the process. We're seeing the birth pains, you know, that Rachel says a lot about this new development of a new America, which we recognize not per se geographically, but we see a new America where white people are starting to think themselves as a race. And they're going to start doing everything as a race. They're going to start looking at themselves as racial politics. Everything is going to be revolving around race. And that's part of God's fulfillment in bringing back his kingdom. And so this, you know, this, you know, this project that the Knights are involved in, to me, that's part of it.
Right, because even though God's got it all in control, every single person's going to have to stand in front of them and be held accountable for whether they worked to have compassion and benevolence for their own people, or whether they just said, somebody else will take care of it.
Right.
Yeah, because there's, knowledge doesn't mean anything. Just because somebody has knowledge of what's going on, like I mentioned before and emphasized once again, somebody has knowledge of what's happening, and then says, but it's too late, I'm not going to try. Then they are just as much they have betrayed our people just as much as any politician or preacher out there. Just as much. There's no comfort or rest or salvation in your knowledge. And just because somebody has knowledge of what's happening, then says, well, nothing we can do about it, it's too late. They're a traitor. They're a traitor. I don't care. They're a traitor because they betrayed our nation, our people, just as much as all those politicians have. And so knowledge in itself is important, but greater than knowledge, we need a repentance. And not the kind of repentance that you see in the TV preacher. We're not talking about that kind of repentance. But a repentance back to the laws of our God, the laws of our people, and then loving our people, loving our God. We're not talking about repentance on what kind of church doctrine you have, or how many times you walk down the aisle frontwards or backwards, or how many times you get baptized, what direction, or anything like that. We're talking about repentance back to the very basic foundation that is required of any people, and that is to love your God and to love your people. And if we don't regain a love for our people, then we haven't repented. And love for our people means to work for their salvation. if you are willing to accept, as some people within the movement have, if you're willing to accept defeat, then you evidently don't love our people. You haven't loved our people because you're willing to allow them to be destroyed because too much effort and too much work on your part.
And building on that, if they're a parent or a grandparent, then they just need to sit in front of their child, sit in front of their grandchild, and say, "You're not worth this fight. Yeah. I'm going to be dead and gone. So enjoy, Mary. Enjoy you being, raped, maybe possibly by non-white. Enjoy maybe your grandchildren being bullied by non-whites."
Or
marrying a non-white. You're just not important. I don't really care about your future. And that's basically what they're saying. We did at last church, Dad. You had all the children stand in front of the congregation and say, "Look at these children and tell them that they're not worth it." If you actually believe that there's not hope out there, then look at the children's eyes and tell them you're not worth it, And your future is basically damned, And so that's why this Christian Research and Development Center is vitally, vitally important, because we understand the Knights, the organization, we understand that with the future as it looks, with this more pressing genocide upon our people and on our culture, we know that white people are going to naturally start being attracted to each other. They're going to hunger going towards an organization that is doing something, going towards the light. They're going to want to go and actually travel somewhere to meet people, because it's not going to be popular to meet other white nationalists in an open forum in certain places. And so people are going to hunger for that. And yes, you might have social media, but it doesn't amount to nothing as far as actually being physically with one-on-one with people, speaking to them like-minded. And that's why this is, again, important. And again, the Knights is the only one that has it. There's no other racialist organization. And if you want to be very broad about it, Klan, so-called neo-Nazis, any so-called white, supremacist organizations.
Another
that
names
they
use.
Yeah. All these evil names that the enemy likes to use.
Patriots.
There is no organization that has the capability or the infrastructure that's going on right now, such as the Knights. There's just simply no other.
And I want to say that the social media is fine, but social media is not evangelism. Social media just means you got some information.
Right.
You read about what's going on here, read about what's going on there. But it's not evangelism. And that's what the Knights is involved in. Evangelism. Taking a message to our people. Being a lighthouse for our people. And letting them see the light. Not just, there's bad people out there doing bad stuff. But here is a light that you can see. And follow the pathway of the light of Jesus Christ and repentance. And we'll find deliverance not only for our souls and body, but deliverance for our nation.
Well, it's kind of like, let's say a man has a family. And say 100 years ago, and they're traveling out west. And he has a family. And back home on the East Coast, he was an excellent carpenter. He knows all how to build a house. He's got all the knowledge. Then they get out west somewhere, and his wife and kids are out shivering in the cold, and they're like, "Daddy, please build us a house." He's like, "I know how to build a house. Well, then build us a house." Well, in knowing how to build a house good enough, do you actually need a house to live in? It's like people, like you said, Dad, people will have the knowledge, but they don't do anything with it.
It'll be like someone busts into your house, and your little child is hiding back in the closet, scared to death. And you're sitting there saying, "Well, just hide, but they're going to get us, Daddy." "Well, I know, but..." "Yeah, get your gun." "Oh, it's too much effort. It's outside of the room." "That's too much work. And the guy is pretty big. I don't know. You might hurt me if I fight him." So,
well, there's building on that, there's a TV ad
And it's about security systems.
Oh, and God, and it's a bad white guy.
No, it's not this one. But it's about security, and they have it where you have a couple robbers breaking into the bank,
uh-huh.
and you have the cop, or I guess the security guard, and he's standing there, and everyone's on the floor, and one person that's on the floor, customers, yells at the security guard, "Do something!" And he goes, "Oh, my job is just to inform the people that there's a bank robbery." You know, and they're like looking at him. He looks back at the robbers. And then he turns back to the customer that's on the floor. And he goes, "There's a bank robbery in process." So that's all his job is. I'm just telling people.
Well, it's a segue here into protection and guns, I suppose, is that... there's a deal I saw on the internet where it says two guys are talking, and one guy says, "You know, I'm thinking about buying a gun for protection." The guy says, "No, you don't need a gun. You don't need a gun. There's a better way." And then it's supposed to like a commercial break comes in, and the guy says, "Yes, this is a better way than having dangerous firearms in your home. You can establish your own gun-free zone. Send for a packet for $10.95. We'll send you all the material you need to establish your own gun-free zone." Then show pamphlets and posters and stuff like that. And said, "Just imagine the security you're going to have." You know, then it shows a guy in a business store, and a guy runs in with a gun. And he yells at him, said, "Hands up, give me all your money." And the guy said, "Don't shoot, don't shoot." Then he points up to the wall, and to the side, and said, "Gun-free zone." And then the robber said, "Oh, dang, gun-free zone. I'm sorry." He walks up. And showed come on and see, like, little old lady in bed and got busted into her house. And go to rob her. And she, "Oh, don't hurt me." And she points to the wall. And he's, "Oh, gun-free zone. Oh, my bad. I'm sorry. I'll be leaving now." Well, it must be the same thing. You know, people need guns. They need to protect themselves. And... you know, it's so funny because these politicians who promote gun-free zones. The White House, is that a gun-free zone?
No.
I think you're going
to... pretty safe. They got firearms all over the place.
Yeah, so I don't think... I think Obama ought to put signs all around the White House. This is a gun-free zone.
Well, again, it's an elitist attitude. Your politicians, even your congressmen, you know, they have bodyguards. They got security around them because they won't be safe. You know, but it goes back to that elitist attitude. They want the average person out there not to be protected. They don't want the firearms, but they want the exception with them. You know, they want with the president or the congressman or, you know, if you're a liberal. They want the exception with them, but the average person, they don't want firearms. Yeah. Because they know what's best.
And the armored cars that driving down the street with the $1 million, are those gun-free zones? this armored car is gun-free zone. There are no guns on this vehicle at all.
Well, a lot of those elitists that are into all that, but they have the body. I think truly deep down inside, they're just really big sissies. Because I think they are scared of guns. And they could never imagine themselves using a gun for self-defense. I mean, they just run in a corner and pee themselves to death. You know, but now they're going to let someone else, some macho man who's a bodyguard or whatever, you know, they're going to let them defend them. But deep down inside, they're too cowardly to be able to defend themselves. And they just can't imagine that there are red-blooded Americans throughout the country who... will defend themselves,
right.
And they'll use a weapon to defend themselves. And yeah, they might be, you know, scared during some sort of a invasion or confrontation or something like that. But they've got the guts to defend themselves. I don't think some of these liberal elitists. I think they're just too scared to even. I've watched a thing here a year or two ago. It was on a women's gun website, and they were just talking about like the Matt Lauers in the world, you know. From the Today Show, just, you know, just how they're so, you know, she knew a couple guys at work and they knew that she'd go to the gun range and she was like, all for, you know, women, hey, protect yourself, self-defense and stuff like that. You know, you can learn some karate kicks, but if you really want to protect yourself while you're walking down late at night from the office, you know, have a gun. And some of the guys at work were just, you know, oh, that, you know, they're just real liberal about, oh, you don't want to do that, you're going to shoot yourself and stuff like that. She's like, this was coming from guys that she said, you know, were just, I mean, it's not like they were gay or anything, they're married and kids and stuff, but they just were, like, sissified as far as their, you know, the thought that they could actually defend themselves.
Because guns will sometimes get up and just kind of float around the room and look for somebody to shoot. Yeah. I guess that's what they must think. You know, if you have a gun in your home and you're sitting there watching TV, the gun might just rise, start floating around the room.
Yeah.
And then start shooting people.
It's possible. I kind of had an experiment as well. You know, I took a gun, put it on the table.
And you watched it.
I watched it, you know, but I left, and then I came back an hour later, and that gun was still sitting there.
It didn't move at all?
It didn't move. It didn't start, like, trying to shoot.
Did it shoot some people?
No, it just sat there. So I was kind of amazed. But since we are, you know, kind of joking, and since we are kind of talking about guns, and this is the nice party round table. One thing
we like guns.
We like guns.
Second Amendment.
But one thing I think really what makes the Knights unique is that we have an outreach program regarding cops. We have an outreach program for law enforcement in general, and I think that's again what really makes the Knights unique is because we understand. With our law enforcement,
there's specific audiences like young people and law enforcement we know have got to be reached.
Absolutely. And because we know this attack, even on law enforcement, is an attack on our culture. And some people don't recognize that, but the white culture has always been a culture of obedience, a culture of discipline. And when we have law enforcement and they're average white men and women going to work, trying to do the right thing. They're trying to get the bad guys off the streets. You know, they're not joining and getting a badge on saying, oh, how can I go and disarm the American people? How can I go out there and get these evil white races? What can I do? I mean, they're out there trying to do the right thing. They're trying to get the bad guys off the street. And when we have white people in law enforcement who are constantly being bombarded with the blacks blacks and non-whites basically saying the cops are enemies, that is a great target for us because we know that these white people up there, these white law enforcement officers, those are the audience that we're trying to target because for the most part, they're just good people. They're trying to do their job.
Yeah, and you know, sometimes people say, well, most of them are getting bad guys. Most of them just writing traffic tickets. But let's look at this side for a second. Do you really want to go drive to town today, Jason, and have maniacs driving down the highway 80, 90 miles an hour in a 30-mile zone? Do you really want people running through the red lights and traffic lights and endangering yourself?
Right.
No, you want an orderly society where people drive at a decent speed, you know what's going on, and you're driving accordingly, and so on. So law enforcement does help provide that.
Yeah,
right.
It's part of civilization.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. That's part of. I'm sorry that we are a civilized people.
Yeah, we're not anarchists.
Yeah, and if you don't have police officers patrolling the street, then people are going to drive crazy. I mean, they're doing it already.
Right.
I don't know how many times I see people run through red lights, and I'm thinking, my goodness sakes, you know.
Also, there was a cop there giving a ticket.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and so yeah, sometimes it's irritating. You know, we figure I'm going to go 30 miles over the speed limit, you know. But you know what I'm saying.
Right.
We, you know, sometimes, you know, we don't want a policeman on every corner, on every doorstep, peeking into our windows and things like that. We don't want that. So we're not advocating tons and tons and tons of police officers.
A police state.
Yeah, we're not advocating that. But in a civil society, there's nothing wrong with keeping the traffic and streets moving at a safe speed and so forth. And we have had that in the past. Now,
the blacks don't like it because they're so often, which is always just incredible to me, that they are in the process of committing a crime or they have drugs in their car or they had a warrant out and they're stupid enough to drive down the road with fictitious tags or with, you know, a brake light out or different things like that or speeding and then they get... I just got pulled over because I had a brake light out. What are they persecuting me? I didn't do anything wrong. I was just driving down the street and had a brake light out. I saw a bunch of comments like that the other day on a law enforcement website. Some people were
Could be a warning originally.
Yeah. You know. Like, I don't know. I mean, we're in a little white community here, and people get pulled over if they have a headlight out. I mean, it's not safe for other drivers. You got brake light out. I mean, you know.
They don't usually write tickets for that.
They're going to give you a warning. Yeah, if you've got your... you roll down the window and you got a meth pipe sitting there on the seat with you, and you're like, "Oh, it's not mine. It was just there a few minutes. You know, I went to the store and come back, and it was sitting there on the seat next to me. I don't know where it come from." Well, yeah, you're probably going to go to jail, you know. But anyway,
well, the thing is, with the law enforcement in general, what we have to understand is that law enforcement, they're our friends. They're not our enemies. And law enforcement, depending where you live at, you know, in the cities and the jurisdiction, they are going to be constantly be bombarded. Not only that cops are bad, but they're also being bombarded with the propaganda that the white resistance is their enemy. They're being bombarded by the ADL, the Southern Poverty Law Centers, their pamphlets and their materials that the white resistance, you know, hates the cops. That they're all dangerous, they're all criminals, that if you pull one over, that you know, they're going to kill you. I mean, they're actually
giving
that propaganda. Right. And we have to counteract that. We have to inform the law enforcement that the white resistance is not the bad guys. We're not out there committing crimes. We're not out there advocating for them being killed. We are not doing that, and that we stand behind our law enforcement officers. We want an orderly society. We believe that there needs to be a safe society. And so we have to change that mindset. And that's why this outreach program that the Knights have regarding law enforcement, which contains, what, 4 DVDs?
Yeah, we've got 4 DVD sets, specially prepared newspapers.
You and Dad have spoken in Washington, D.C. over the years. To law enforcement to give them the
accurate
view of the white resistance.
And yeah, I want to say that I think for the most part, vast majority, I have no way to tell what percentage, vast majority of law enforcement, excuse me, is not buying into the ADL propaganda.
No.
Right. And that's why they keep bombarding, and the SPLC keeps bombarding, because most white officers, they're not buying into it.
Well, because they see on the street what's happening.
They know where the problem's at.
Yeah. Right. Well, they may say, oh, it's these evil, the white races. In their mind, they're going, no, it's not.
I need to stay off of Martin Luther King Street.
Yeah.
Well, one thing that, you know, law enforcement and I think the Knights has in common is that we both recognize that one of the serious things that's going on within the law enforcement community that many of them are concerned about. And of course, you have your elitist leaders in every organization and community and profession and so forth. But that is the slow manipulation and takeover of your local police departments by more of an international type police force. And that's where you get into trouble. That's where you start seeing bureaucracy. That's where you start seeing more of a leadership in law enforcement that doesn't care about the concerns of local communities. They're not even from that community. They're from somewhere else. They're only concerned with keeping their job, and that means showing that the law enforcement, the local agency needs, you know, more supplies. They need more this. They need more that, and they have to justify that need on paper to be able to get more tax dollars so they can buy more supplies. And it's just an ongoing back and forth deal and a slow manipulation, you know, of your police panels and oversight review boards and things like that, just constantly hounding at local law enforcement. And that's wrong. And local law enforcement know it also. Now, just recently out in San Francisco, the police chief there, I forget his last name is Suri, which kind of sounds Asian, but he looks like a white guy. They've just started a program that all their police in San Francisco is required to participate in, as well as every new recruit through the police academy in San Francisco, and it's called Not On My Watch. They've got a website and a Facebook, and they keep removing my posts. But anyway, they have a community-wide program and a pledge that they're all required to take that says if they, basically, if they hear of or become aware of any type of racial belief or opinion or supposed action of any police officer, that they are immediately, without fail, to go to, they've got an office just to take those anonymous reports, and then they will investigate those the police officers. So it's basically, and it's a pledge, they're being required now. And you can go online to notonmywatch.com and read the pledge, and new recruits are required to take it. And it's all to help, they say, bridge the gap between the low opinion that the minority community in San Francisco has against law enforcement.
And all that,
because
and,
they're being unfair because they stop you for no reason.
And that, and what that's going to be is that's going to be a discrimination against your white cops, white Christians, because you might have a cop that's a Muslim or some other religion, and they might be being proud of that. They're not going to be reported. No. But if you have a white cop, O'Neill, who's like proud of being Irish,
and he's online and he's going, "Go Trump, go!"
Yeah, like that. Oh, you must be a racist.
I'm
going to
anonymously report you.
Well, black pride is considered pride. Asian pride is considered pride. Gay pride is considered pride. Jewish pride is considered pride. Mexican pride is considered pride. White pride is considered hate. Yeah. I mean, it's just that simple.
Hate and racist. Yep.
Yeah,
that's why they say only white people can be racist. Nobody else can be racist. Only white people.
Yeah. And you know, you're not just saying that as a lark. They say, and
that's
actually,
what they actually
say that.
Say all your white privilege classes and seminars and assemblies in your schools and colleges and stuff. Yeah.
So the nation is in darkness, and it does need light.
Yeah. Right.
Well, and we with the Knights Party, we have members and associates that are in law enforcement.
Right.
We have the with city police. We have them with the county sheriff's departments. We have them with the
border
patrol. We have them with the federal and the state police. We have members that are in law enforcement, in all aspects of law enforcement. And we know that they're trying to do the right thing, and they have the bureaucracy above them,
right,
telling them, well, you got to do this, you got to do that. And they know the policies that's coming down and being shoved down their throats. Especially on a federal level,
right.
And so we have to counteract that, because we know that ultimately our law enforcement, they're going to have to back us, you know, and and ultimately at the end of the day, the guy who has a gun, you want them to be behind your back,
yeah,
right.
and helping and protecting you,
not pointing it at your back, but
but right. being beside you.
Speaking about law enforcement, this is kind of the same deal. Have you heard anything? I haven't yet, but I know last election there was talk about it, and I haven't heard anything this time. Maybe you have, that have UN monitors to monitor our elections.
They are still working for that. During the hanging Chad deal, a group of black congressmen and women got together and issued a request to the UN, and every presidential cycle they continue to put that request into the United Nations to have them come in and give oversight to the election throughout the country. Yeah, so I mean, yeah, it's kind of like a far stretch right now, but but the more you get, you know,
they keep pushing it.
I mean, you know,
and more, like, and the demographics change.
Right. The demographics change. You know, the police department there outside of St. Louis and stuff. You know, the federal they come out here just a week ago and said that, yep, even though, you know, Darren Wilson didn't do any wrong and this and that, we really haven't found, you know, any huge problems or anything like that. The bottom line is, you know, you need to hire more minority officers.
Well, they took over control of that city.
They've taken over control.
Yeah, because just the perception. Not that anything was going to happen that was doing wrong. It's just a perception.
And the perception created by black protesters.
Right.
Right. And so you have more of that happening throughout the country, and that's just a step away from them saying, okay, United Nations, I need you to come in and watch this election. Oh, give oversight. I mean, even though in the minority communities, that's where you have your voter fraud happening, so it'd be kind of like they're asking for oversight on themselves. That's not what they're asking, because they want them to come in and oversee
free speech.
Free speech.
That's what it's about.
Well, and how they do that is...
You can't say that in this election. That's right. Hate speech.
Right. Well, and how they do that is what people don't understand is that they do that through treaties. They do that through treaties for organizations within the different countries where they make a treaty. All the countries sign to it.
And that supersedes U.S. law.
That supersedes U.S. law. And people don't understand that concept that, yes, you can have a treaty that's enacted, and once it's approved by that country, then the treaty is almost like the supreme law of the land. And people don't understand that. I was listening to the radio yesterday, and this is something that Rachel and I talked about a month ago, but it was the signing, it's been approved, the Trans-Pacific. Yeah. And it had this London guy, because he was from... He had an English accent, so I'm assuming.
Really smart.
And yeah, and he was in Washington D.C. where they signed.
To our listeners from London.
Yeah, sorry guys, but it was Washington D.C. yesterday, and they signed it, making it the largest, most extensive, and comprehensive. I think it was a free trade and all that in the world, most comprehensive. You know. And it's with your 11, I think, major countries. I think it was something like that.
Pacific Islands down the coast of South
And now
America,
they just have, now they just have to get Asia. Each country approve it. Okay.
And they will.
And they're already on board.
Yeah, they'll approve it quickly.
They wouldn't be doing this if the countries were not already on board.
Yeah.
So the countries are already on board. And once they actually, each country officially signs onto it, that's the treaty and that will be the law of the land. So people understand they can do that. You know, with your gun rights, they can do that with, you know, your so-called First Amendment, which can be harder, but it's a stepping stone. It's a slippery slope.
Still pursue it.
You know? And so it's all this attempt, again, to trying to have white genocide.
Part of that treaty, that Pacific Treaty, part of the details of that is that it's going to allow workers in companies that have perhaps an office in India somewhere, maybe one in Brazil or Sao Paulo or places like that. And it doesn't have to be just some executive office. It's going to allow all their workers to go through the borders without any you know, prior paperwork.
Because international corporations hold no loyalty. They have no national loyalty. Their loyalty is only to their bottom line. International corporations are, in a sense, a nation to themselves.
Yeah.
They have no national loyalty to nations, but only to their profits and their bottom line. International corporations do. And so this treaty will certainly be good for third world countries. But no way the American worker can compete with that.
We're Americans,
and they'll be able to come over here. I weave cloth down in New Delhi in India for whatever.
And we have a shortage of cloth.
$3 a day.
Cloth weavers
and
basket weavers.
And I sell cloth to this company in Idaho that they then take and make into something. Therefore, because it might be two or three steps down, but ultimately my employer and my goods are being sold to this company in Idaho. That means I don't need visas and things like that to travel. I can just travel into the United States when I want to.
Well, sure, because when he weaves his baskets, and we're being very simplistic here, okay? We understand that. But
and they do make some beautiful cloth and rugs.
Yeah,
and stuff,
but when they weave their baskets, it's expensive shipping them to the supplier. So whatever, so they come to America and weave the baskets here. Because there is a shortage of basket weavers in this country.
Right.
I don't know if you're aware of that, Jason.
I was not aware of that.
But I don't know. Of all the people I know in Harrison, I don't know one single person who's a basket weaver.
don't know.
And we have a real shortage in this country, yeah, that talent. And so we need to import basket weavers from the Amazon.
But we're Americans, and we believe in hard work, and we can compete with the rest of them. So that shouldn't be a problem.
Well, yeah, but our basket weavers make too much money. Wow. If we do have a basket weaver, it could have cost. But you get a basket
but
weaver.
But if they know that, but they know if it was made here in America, in the Ozarks, and it was hard work and sweat, they're going to want to buy our baskets
that's right.
that cost $25 instead of $4.
That's right. Yeah. That's true. Well, you know, I was walking through Walmart the other day, and I, you know, just a comment, because I don't know anything behind my comment, but I saw they had a big, like, I think it was a TV or something, and a big stock, assembled in the USA. Really? That's what we have come to. Assembled in the USA.
And that doesn't mean everything. It could have been one bolt. We put that final bolt, and that was assembled in the USA.
Assembled in the USA.
The box that came in. Something like that.
Well, that's what we come to. And the thing is, people say, some of these things we're referring to is, oh, that'll never happen. It'll never happen. Well, all you have to do is look at this country, look back 20 years, and see what has changed.
Yeah.
And 20 years ago, if you would have said what we have today, what the laws, what's going on in our nation today, if 25 years ago you said this is what's going to be like in 2016, people laughed at you and said, "Oh, never happened in the United States. What's the queer marriages? Yeah. That would never happen." As an example,
right?
And yet it's here.
Well, again, we know that once you change the racial makeup of a society, everything changes. You know, at New York Times, Newsweek, Time Magazine, they've all had countless articles and their cover sheets on the paper that have demonstrated, that have said that once America starts changing its racial makeup, everything's going to change from race to culture to their laws, to their social values. I mean, everything's going to change.
Politics.
And so, when people say it's not going to happen, I mean, I guess they have their head in the, like an ostrich, head in the sand and just thinking it's not going to occur.
Well, it's like I was watching on PBS last week. It was with the University of Missouri. And because I like to watch different travel, I like to know what other people are, even if I don't agree with them, I like to, you know what other people are thinking and doing and stuff. But anyway, there's a special with the University of Missouri, and they were talking about their sister university in, I forget where it was in China, but it was in China. And so they showed a University of Missouri graduation in China for the Chinese students. But then they talked, in Springfield, Missouri. Anyway, and then they were talking about the almost 6,000. And I thought, I found it hard to believe, so I went and looked it up later, watched the show that they then put on their website. Anyway, almost 6,000 Chinese students from China who have gone through the university, part of the programs in China at the University of Missouri, now living in Springfield. It's a huge Chinese student population in Springfield, Missouri.
Yeah, and these are not illegals.
No.
These are illegals.
And they went through and interviewed a bunch of them, and the majority of them plan to stay.
Yeah.
You know, some of them were...
And we're not saying they're bad people.
We're not saying
they're about committing crimes, bad people.
But we don't want to live in China.
Right.
We want to live in the United States of America. That, you know, Mayberry.
Was a white country.
The people
it was founded for
that,
white people.
But, you know.
And it's basically population replacement.
Right.
I mean, it's to displace the white people and bring in a new racial makeup.
Right. And, you know, we hear the thing all the time about illegal aliens. Well, that is a problem. But it's kind of a smokescreen.
Right.
Right.
Because the real problem is not illegal aliens. The real problem is legal aliens.
Exactly.
You know, who are coming in the right way.
Yeah.
And because they're still changing our culture. They're still changing America into something different.
And I get so upset when people say, you know, that, you know, if they're going to do it, they need to go the right way. You know, the legal immigration we don't need to stop is the illegals. Well, no, the legal immigration you need to stop too.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, it's like both Ted Cruz and Mark Rubio during the last go around election here 4 years ago when they were, you know, considering runs and stuff. Now, both of them, they were trying to reach out to Hispanic voters, and they were talking about, you know, immigration reform, and we need to create a path for citizenship, and I believe it was Rubio, maybe it was Cruz, but I believe it was Rubio that was in favor of just, you know, across the board amnesty, and then we'll kind of start over again and stuff like that. And
yeah,
of course, now they're all backpedaling huge because oh, that's not what the people want. You know, but
that's not what the people in Europe are wanting. There are five people in Europe are getting pretty upset about it.
Yeah. Absolutely. And it's a mess, but that doesn't mean you've stopped reaching out to your people. It just makes it more important.
Well, I think that it all goes back to, again, that, you know, part of our organization, part of the Knights, you know, in reaching our people, all these outreach programs that we have, you know, really makes us, separates us from, you know, other white racist organizations.
It's cutting edge.
Right. Because, I mean, if a person looks at other white racialist organizations, and when we talk about the difference, we're not putting other organizations down. We're not saying they're bad. We're glad there's other people out there trying to reach people. Right. We're glad that they're trying to get the message. So we're not downplaying it. But I think the fact is the Knights is unique. The Knights have an opportunity to really to be the voice of the white resistance. And right. That's why the Knights have really become the voice of the white resistance. Because right. We have all these different outreach programs from the youth corps. We have outreach programs for law enforcement.
And we talk to the media flocks to us all the time.
Well, I mean, constantly. You and Dad and other members of the Knights at headquarters here are constantly doing interviews throughout the week. I know yesterday, Dad had an interview with a student doing an interview on the Klan. I know you've done several this past week. I know you and Dad have done several interviews with reporters. I don't recall the different states about, you know,
works of setting stuff up. Also,
yeah, the white resistance about just the white resistance views on the Trump campaign. Or the racial makeup that's changing in the United States. And so the reporters are flocking to the Knights because they see what the Knights are doing. They see the Knights is unique. And literally, you can, just because you have a website, just because you may have a podcast, just because you may, you know, put out a flyer, does not mean you're an organization. Right. And so often people say, well, look at this website like that. Okay, well, that's great. That's good. But that's not an organization.
Where's the meat and potatoes?
Right. And the Knights, that's what really makes us unique because we are an organization. We have the infrastructure. We have the buildings. We have the land. We have all the, just the structures. We have an office.
We have the message.
We have a message. But we have an office. We have the Christian Revival Center. On the grounds here. I mean, so there are so many great positive things that are coming out of the Knights that literally there's no other organization out there, racialist organization, that can even compare to the Knights. You know?
Absolutely.
And I think that's what really makes the Knights unique and why the media sees the Knights growing, and that's why they're flocking to us regarding interviews, because when you have a good message, a positive message, a message that the enemy is having to deal with, they take notice.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why they're like, well, this organization is actually doing something. They're actually reaching people. That's a scary thought that they're reaching teenagers and the white youth out there. I mean, I can personally
center an office they can come and take pictures of and do an interview at.
Yeah.
And our message is a, you know, the Bible says, when my judgment in the land, the inhabitants of the earth will learn righteousness. And we are facing the judgment of God today. And the problem is that our people need to, once again, learn to love their God and love their people. We don't advocate hatred towards anybody. We don't advocate hating black people or hating Asians. We don't believe in hating people. That accomplishes nothing. But we do believe that we have a right to love our people and love our people more. Just like an example I use all the time, a man should love his wife more than the neighbor's wife. I think that's self-evident. And a person should love their parents more than neighbor's parents, love their kids more than the neighbor's kids. That's the responsibility of a mom and dad. Jason, you make money doing what you do. Do you come home and give your money away to the neighbors?
No.
You provide for your children first, don't you?
Exactly.
But do you hate all the neighbor kids? No, but you have a responsibility. We have a responsibility to our racial
ties with
nation.
Other,
pardon?
Any ties.
In our tithe.
Well, yeah, you tithe, you know, and that's part of loving our people, you know, and being faithful to the commandments of the Lord. So, you know, people are required to provide for their family, but part of that providing for your family is teaching them principles, and part of those principles you teach is tithing to support this message to go out to our people. Because if we don't do that, if we're not that light to our nation, then again, we're no better than the politicians who have openly betrayed us. So we have a responsibility to be a light to the nation, to our spoken word, to the printed word, and to any other effort that we incorporate, and through the tithing of those people who support and believe in the cause and the future of their children and their people. So we are in some interesting times of world history. Certainly, there's a dark cloud that has descended upon our nation. But in that midst of that darkness, we believe that we have a message of hope and deliverance. The Bible says, "Don't put your light under a bushel basket, but set out a candlestick so all may see in the household." And we believe that we have a light that we want to put out so all may see. And we are able to put out that light because we do have people who do love their nation, do love their people, do love their children, and want to help support it and make that light shine brighter.
Well, absolutely. I think that one of those keys is that when we see this happening, everyone needs to be contributing to the nice. They need to be tithing. They need to be sending their money.
Well, Christian Revival Center.
Yeah,
to the church we pastor.
Right, but it's vitally important because again we are not supported by Fortune 500 companies. We don't have the luxury to be getting checks for $500,000, a couple $1 million from 500 corporations, major corporations in the United States. We don't have the luxury of that. So we are counting on men and women out there that love their race and love their God. And part of their duties is to ensure that this organization is funded in order to reach our lost brothers and sisters out there. And so often people negate that. People think, well, I don't want to send, you know, $100, $200, $500, $1,000. I don't need to do that because for whatever reason. It might be a selfish reason, or they may think that it's really not going to do anything. But if you really are serious about waking your people up, then you need to get behind this organization. This organization is doing something. It is accomplishing something. And that is your duty and obligation. And if you negate that, then shame on you. You know, and we are at a critical opportunity here in history and time. And either we're going to be victorious or we're going to lose. Ultimately, God is going to deliver us, but we have to be a tool. And part of that tool is for people sending their money in to make sure that this organization is funded. And, you know, I no longer feel ashamed asking that. And, of course, we never feel ashamed about that because we know the fight we're involved in. And if a person out there says, well, I don't want to send money in, then you don't really care about your race. You don't care about the future of your people. If you are not contributing, then you really don't care. And some people may get upset with me on that, but that's my attitude.
Well,
the money is basically what your belief is.
Absolutely. Just an example, I'm going to close up real quick. We have this billboard out on the highway. That billboard has a simple message on. It's not racist to love your people. A lot of people going by that then come to a radio station. People are listening to this right now, probably are here because of that billboard. But even those people who may never go to the radio station for one reason or another, they're still seeing that one simple concept, positive concept that they probably, I know they don't see anywhere else. It's not racist to love your people. That billboard costs money to put up. It costs a lot of money. And most people listening to this, you cannot afford to put the billboard up by yourself. But working together with other people, coveting together with other people who send their contributions and tithe, we're able to put that billboard up. We're able to keep this website on. We're able to keep other programs going and ministering. And is it enough? No, it's not enough. We'd like to do a lot more. We'd like to be on satellite radio, satellite stations from beaming from the sky. Will that ever happen? Probably not. But who knows what can change in the future? We don't know. But right now, we do know that we can have a billboard up. We can put out newspapers. We can get literature distributed. We can do a lot of things. And it all boils down to our ability to reach into, you know, I went to the store the other day to buy literature for, or not literature, but buy some supplies up at Staples. And I went to the register to pay for it. And you know what I did? I pulled a long list of people and said, these are all people that said they support us. Yeah. And he said, because I have a lot of people, we support you.
Right.
We support you, but they never contribute.
Right.
I don't know how many people say, we support you. So I made a list. I went to a Staples. They said, they'll say that's going to be $220 for the, all the supplies. I said, well, I don't have the $220, but I got a list of people who support us.
Right. Did that work?
No.
It didn't work. Yeah.
It didn't work.
Absolutely.
So one thing to say, verbally say you support us, fine. We appreciate that. We appreciate your friendship.
Yeah.
But you need to get behind this ministry and help us move forward. Anything else? We're going to close it up.
I think that's it. Again, people need getting a hold of us for the Faith and Freedom Conference. It's coming down quickly, a couple months down the road. It's very easy to do. If you want to show up, get your calendar, mark out April 29th, 30th, and May 1st.
And that's it.
And plan on being here.
It's
pretty simple.
It's just a decision.
Yeah. You can find an excuse for anything. You know, but if you really love your people, want to do something about it, attend this conference. It's a family event. Bring your spouse. Bring your children.
Right.
This is an attack against our people and against our family.
Yeah. Well, we'd like to see everybody right now take out and send us a check to P.O. Box 2222 Harrison, Arkansas, made out to the Knights Party, or you can make it out to Christian Revival Center. Make a generous contribution to help keep us moving forward. Go to the internet, Rachel, and you do what on the internet?
They can go to kkk.bz and click on the donate button, and they can go there and donate with their credit or debit card.
KKK.B like Bobby Z.
Yeah.
And click on the donate button.
And remember, state and federal tax refund checks, there's no reason why you should not be able to give a percentage of that.
10%.
10% to the client or the church.
Okay.
Yeah, we've got to get that research center up and running so we can get them young people in there and get them trained.
Okay, well, until next time, this is Thomas Robb.
Jason Robb.
Rachel Pendergrass.
And we're reminding you to love your God and love your people.